Pay scales more in line with the private sector. Fewer automatic raises, but bigger merit-based raises. Those are just some of the ideas the Heritage Foundation is proposing for the next administration. James Shirk is research fellow in labor economics at the Heritage, and he joins me with more of what's in its comprehensive proposals. Mr. Shirk, great to have you on.
Thank you for inviting me.
And so let's just talk about the Office of Personnel Management suggestions, and because Heritage has a 152-page proposal for policies and pretty much everything the federal government does, but let's talk about employee pay and benefits here. And right off the bat, you're proposing what looks like a slower growth in the wages for federal employees. Tell us about that proposal.
That's right. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that federal employees, on average, receive more than they would in the private sector, both in terms of cash wages and their benefits. But that's only an average figure. You've got plenty of federal employees who could probably make more in the private sector than they do now, and then a lot of federal employees who are making far, far more than the 16% premium that CBO estimates. So what we want to do is bring federal pay to parity with what people would have had in the private sector. We've suggested taking the automatic step increases, the so-called within-grade increases, or WIGIs, which are currently about 3%. That most federal employees will get either 1, 2, or 3 years, depending where they are on the general schedule, and knocking that down to about 2%, so that the total pay gradient between Step 1 and Step 10 would be only 20% instead of 30%. Well, at the same time, increasing the managers' amounts that they have for performance bonuses. Currently, federal managers get about 1% of their employees' total payroll that they can hand out as bonuses on the basis of good performance, and we'd increase that to 5%. So you'd have a roughly 5 percentage point reduction in total pay, but the managers would have the flexibility to reward with higher pay those folks who are currently you shouldn't get a pay cut because they're getting paid fairly now, or even those folks who are getting undercompensated now.
And there's also a cultural issue with that one, because you wouldn't want the federal managers, I wouldn't think, to just give out a flat 5% across the board if that's the pool they had.
No, that's right. The proposal is that this would be directed on the basis of performance and productivity, and that this would indeed be a performance-related bonus. It wouldn't simply be everyone gets 5%.
And also, you look at paid leave and see that there's a way to bring that more in line with what's average in the private sector?
That's right. Again, federal employees get substantially more paid leave than is typically the case in the private sector, even in large private sector firms. And so what we suggested doing was bringing it closer to parity, where currently for a federal employee with 3 or fewer years of service, they get 13 paid leave days plus the sick leave days. We'd take that down to 10 days. For those between 4 and 15 years, they get 20 days of paid leave. We'd take that down to 15 days. And for those with the what's currently 26 days or greater, we'd take that down to 20 days. And again, this would be fairly comparable to the leave benefits you get at the large Fortune 500 companies.
Now, the companies like Google and Facebook and so forth, those types of companies on that cutting edge, if you will, are a lot more generous than that, and the government is often saying we need to be more like them.
Well, what we took a look at was surveys that are done of basically large companies, Fortune 500 type companies, large employee companies, and said, what's the 75th percentile of paid leave? So what is the amount of paid leave benefits that roughly, if you're in the top 25%, you're going to be getting? And that's roughly what we recommended there in that setup. Keep in mind that federal employees get all 10 federal holidays off as paid holidays, when in the private sector, certainly Christmas and Thanksgiving and some of the major ones you'll get off, but days like President's Day are usually not paid holidays in the private sector.
We're speaking with James Shirk. He's a research fellow in labor economics at the Heritage Foundation. And of course, hiring and firing has been very much in the news lately, particularly with respect to the Veterans Affairs Department. And you've got some ideas here also for the next administration on especially firing.
Well, that's right. This is a common complaint, even among federal employees, that they have coworkers who are not pulling their weight, not doing a good job, and they just continue to sit around and drag down the agency for years. As much as I talk about these issues, and a lot of federal employees, I understand the perspective, take issue with the notion of reducing their pay. they're usually in the same breath, very quick to say, but yes, there's so much dead weight, let's fix those firing procedures. And so we want to make it easier to get rid of those federal employees who are making it more difficult on their coworkers and hindering their agency's missions. So we've proposed extending the probationary period from 1 year to 3 years, so that period in which the federal employees are essentially at will, giving the managers more time to screen out employees who are just not as productive. We've also proposed limiting the amount of forums that employees can appeal a dismissal through. Right now, if a federal employee gets laid off, they can either go through a union grievance procedure or go through the Merit Systems Protection Board. At the end of that, they can then appeal to the Office of Special Counsel alleging whistleblowing, and they can also file a claim to the EEOC alleging discrimination. What we propose is say pick one. You can't just drag out the claim and drag out the essentially the protections that prevent you from getting fired for years and years and years. Pick one form. If you're alleging you're being terminated for whistleblowing, go to the Office of Special Counsel, but then don't go and file a separate complaint with the Merit Systems Protection Board. We also proposed lowering the burden of proof necessary to use the Chapter 75 firing procedures. Currently, under Chapter 75, the managers have to show a preponderance of evidence. That basically means that managers must prove that a reasonable person would believe the evidence justifies the firing. And that can be a pretty high burden of proof. That's a lot of work on a manager to say that, the most reasonable people would come to this conclusion. So we've just proposed lowering that burden to one that shows that substantial evidence supports the firing. That a reasonable person could come to that conclusion, that it's not unreasonable for the manager to do that. The proposal would be to make it easier for the managers to go through these procedures. So it's not taking, right now it can be essentially a year and a half full-time job or close to a full-time job for a manager to remove an employee. And that's way too much of a burden on managers. They shouldn't have to go through that. There are bad apples, and it shouldn't be that painful for them to get rid of it.
And if we march up the scale of things that might rub some federal employees a long way, we get to pension changes and health care benefit changes that you're proposing that would also seem to trim things back pretty sharply.
Well, the health care changes, I think many federal employees would actually be receptive to. Right now, there's a rule in place that says that federal employees must pay at least 25% of the total cost of their health care plan that they receive from the government, and that the other 75% is then typically between 75% and 72% will get picked up by the federal government. And that discourages competition between the health care plans, because if you offer a plan where it's only a 10% employee cost share, then the employees, if it's a more affordable plan, if it's one that offers more competitive pricing and benefits, the employees don't get much of the savings from that. It accrues to the federal government. And so there's just less competition in the federal healthcare system than there should be. What we've proposed doing is basically eliminating that requirement. If a federal employee wants to get a lower-cost healthcare plan where they only have a 5% or 10% healthcare premium, they ought to be allowed to do that. And that competition between the plans to lower costs would, the CBO estimated, fairly substantially lower healthcare costs. But you're doing it in a way through competition and innovation rather than you're simply saying you guys get less. Now, the pension plans, this is where the CBO estimated that federal pay is most out of line with the private sector. The typical federal employee is getting retirement benefits worth about 18% of their base payroll, and even in large private sector companies, that figure is typically about 5%. And so we've proposed simply for new hires and for employees who aren't yet vested in the system, take them over to entirely to the Thrift Savings Plan, make the Thrift Savings Plan more generous, make it up to an 8% federal contribution, and which is, again, still more than the private sector at 5%, but make the Thrift Savings Plan more generous and then get rid of the FERS defined benefit portion. And then for employees who are not yet vested or who are already in the system, for the most part, we would say for the senior workers, the folks who've been there for 25 years or more, no change to their pensions. They've made a lot of decisions under the plan. We'll just leave it as is. But for the workers in between, say, well, look, you can shift over to the enhanced thrift savings plan if you want and get the 8% match and leave your first benefit frozen. If you want to stay in the first program, you can do that, but you'll have to pay more of an employee contribution so that the total federal contribution is limited to about 8% of payroll, which is, again, more generous than most of the large private sector firms.
And if you add all of this up, it really amounts to civil service reform, I guess. And interestingly, one of the things proposed very early on in the Obama administration was civil service reform. It never really happened. Do you have any sense of the receptivity of this kind of thing right now in Congress, since that's where most of it would have to originate?
Well, I think there would be a fair amount of receptivity in Congress. We've seen that Congress has been interested in reforms on the compensation side. We've seen a lot of interest in the civil service reform. Recall the reforms that were pushed through for the SES employees that the Department of Veteran Affairs after the scandal came out. And there was interest in the time in extending that not just to the SES, but to the employees on the regular GS grades. The government unions were able to block that. But I think there's certainly an openness and a willingness to examine these kind of reforms.
James Shirk is Research Fellow in Labor Economics at the Heritage Foundation. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
You can read the whole report and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.